You are the man that could do the Kerry O'Keefe action when you were a youngster, hey?
Bowling in the backyard.
Bowling in the
Yeah, I was
backyard.
always Australia. See, my poor brother was there to play the visiting
Right.
West Indies or
And
England or something.
tell me with your Kerry O'Keefe action, how was it? Did you
Oh,
turn the ball a
I
lot?
bowled new balls.
Did you?
Did nothing. Those balls did
Well, then how appropriate? Because
can't
Kerry,
say that.
well, he'll admit it himself. He's on the line now. 24 test matches for Australia, and that doesn't even tell half the story of the career of Kerry O'Keefe. It's our pleasure to have him as our legend of the game this morning. G'day, Kerry.
Good morning, boys. Yeah, thousands of people cloned me over the years. None played after the age of 15.
You nailed that one.
Yeah, very good. Hey, Kerry, we like to ask our legends when they do come on the program, how did cricket become a part of your life?
Well, mate, I lived at Cogra in the old Jay Hooker estate there, and age 11, my father said, you've got to play a sport. So he said, in one September morning, Saturday, he said, go down and find a club to play cricket. And I walked through the Chinese Gardens to Scarborough Park, Cogra, and the first pitch I came across, St Cuthbert's, Carlton, C4 were trialling. And I said, I'm 11, you're an under-12 team, I'd like to register. And I bowled and batted on the centre pitch pretty ordinarily. But the moment I got home, I knew that I'd found the game I wanted to play.
Wow, yeah, straight right. away, that's amazing. What about leg spin, though, Kerry? Of all the of all the arts that you can do in cricket, leg spin would have to be the toughest. How did you choose that as a bowler?
Well, there were nets nearby. And a great mate of mine, Johnny McPherson, was the under-12 rep leg spinner, and I loved his action. And I decided to clone his action. So every afternoon after school, I'd cycle with 10 balls down to Scarborough Park Nets and stick a stump up and bowl at that stump till dark. And I just kept hitting that stump with his action. And none of them turned, of course. And then I'd pack up my 10 balls and cycle home. And, you know, it was in my DNA from that day.
Yeah, yeah. You progress rapidly into first-class cricket, into test cricket as a 21-year-old. Did you feel like when you were selected in that side that was led by the legendary Bill Laurie, did you early 1971, did you feel ready for international cricket?
I did, Jimmy. I think, you know, I came out of grade cricket where I took my first grade wickets at an average of 15.
Wow.
I was taking my first class wickets at 27. I knew test cricket would be harder, but when you're 21, you feel you've got the game for it. And I found out very quickly, having got none for 120 on debut, the work was to be done.
Oh, Shane Warne started even worse than that, Kerry.
He did. But, you know, the thing is, I wasn't ready mentally, really. And the fails hurt me overly. And they probably really did, in effect, basically control my career. I didn't have that psyche that could get over the downside of bowling leg spin on flat pitches.
That's interesting, Kerry. If you had your time over again, do you think you could handle that situation better?
Oh, much better. I mean, we all want it over again, boys.
Yeah.
In particularly, I do, because, you know, I let things get on top of me. You know, if I had to equate it, I room with Max Walker a lot, who had fantastic self-belief. You know, David Hook said to me, on my retirement, he said, "Skull, you did well for a club cricketer." And he meant it as a sledge, but I took it as an accolade because he felt I had club cricket ability, but I ended up playing 148 first-class games.
Yeah.
But I roomed with Max Walker, the late Max Walker, much missed, and he just bowled in swing with a little leg cutter, but he won test matches for Australia. And I remember we used to wake up together, like in separate beds. And
glad you said that.
Yeah. He'd turn to me and say, "How do you feel?" and I'd say, okay, how do you feel? And he'd say, I'll be all right once I've got the first five today.
Oh, there you go.
And I thought, wow, mindset. What a big head. Yeah. But no, I, you know, in effect, it was just he believed you get five wickets every time he woke up. Yet there were those inside our side that saw him as a club medium pacer. But that massive self-belief, you know, it was like, well, rugby league was James Maloney. He could make mistakes, but it didn't
doesn't
daunt
worry
him.
Yeah.
I was Ben Hunt. I dropped out of the play if I made a mistake.
It's funny you mention that. I played grade cricket with Greg Matthews in a first grade game and he took the first wicket. We only got one wicket before lunch. And I said to him at lunch, congratulations on getting the first wicket, Greg. And he said, I'll have another five before the end of the day. And he had seven.
Gee, there you go.
He had seven for...
Mate, it's a big thing in sport. It's the biggest thing in cricket, particularly spin bowling. Mm. I mean, McGill and Warne had it. They had mass... Even when Warne got one for 150 on debut. Yeah. And at one stage, he had one for 363 in Test cricket.
Wow.
But Ian Healy told me, that was up 2.5 tests in, I think, said that we couldn't believe how massively he believed that he was the man. And Alan Border threw in the ball to get rid of the Sri Lankan tail in the test match. And he nailed the last three, 9, 10, 11. And 700 test wickets later, he retired.
No, he's a fair bowler.
Yeah, so, hey, I mean, that belief is such a huge thing. But wrist spin in particular, you need it. And Greg Matthews had it as a finger spinner. But it really is the gene that every wrist spinner has. They've got to believe.
Did coming into Test cricket so soon after Richie Beno in Australia, desperately looking for another great leg spin bowler, was that a burden probably too great to carry, Kerry?
I didn't feel it as much, Ray. I didn't feel burden. I just wanted to establish myself as a Test cricketer because that was my dream. I had the baggy green. And I remember in the early conversations in the dressing rooms, the intimation to me was, you've got your baggy green, but you have to perform for us to believe you're worthy. And that was the mantra during the 70s. And you had to sort of contribute to Australia winning test matches. It was a dog-eat-dog, tough-love era.
Yeah.
And occasionally I contributed. But I never quite, won the dressing room in that regard.
Do you think you would have been better suited now when they're a bit more mindful of that type of thing? And do you know that how many other players back in that era when there was that tough love who had a mindset that didn't allow them to thrive, Kerry?
I think a number of people did, Jimmy. And I think people, my era, poo-poo the mollycoddling and the entitlement of the modern era. But I actually like the modern era.
Yeah.
Because there are people to talk to outside the captain. You can go to people and explain where you're at technically and mentally. I think it's a great era to be involved in because there are so many avenues and support within the team. We had a captain and a manager who basically just arranged cabs. I think today is a great period of Australian cricket in terms of players getting the support. I mean, I even when Steve Waugh introduced the presentation of the cap, I think that was a big plus where everybody shakes your hand and wishes you the best.
Yeah,
I think that's a big breakthrough.
In saying that, Kerry, I look back in the 70s when I was a kid and just think it was a golden era of Australian cricket. That 72 Ashes too, when that young crop came through. We had the two Chapels, obviously. We had Lillian Thompson. Great players right down through that 11. It must have been a great era as a player, though, to play alongside players who've become all-time greats, Kerry.
Oh, it was. I mean, I'm not demeaning my era at all. It was a fantastic era for Australian cricket, you know. Openers like Stackpole and Redpath, who were so committed to the cause. And all of Ian Chappell's sides were happy. And that is a key to a captain. He had a lot of champions. I mean, his brother, Dougie Walters, Lily, Marsh, Thompson. Yeah. I mean, but they were all happy. They all wanted to play for him. And that was a key. That side won a lot because the ship just rolled on.
Mm.
And there was no negativity amongst those guys. They all had massive self-belief. And they could handle all situations. I mean, we went to the West Indies in 1973 and Dennis Lilly broke down. And Max Walker took 20-odd wickets. And they prepared turning pitches for Lance Gibbs. And we had the best players of spin in the world, the Chappell brothers, Walters, Ross Edwards. So their plans were all awry. Yeah. They backed Lance Gibbs against me. Fool.
One of your most famous moments in the Baggy Green, of course, is the centenary test of 1977. Most interestingly is the fact that you opened the batting in the second innings after the injury to Rick McCosker. Can you explain to us how that came about, Kerry?
Well, Rick got hit in the first innings by Bob Willis' bouncer.
Mm.
And I batted nine and got a duck. So I thought, you know, there's no chance of me being elevated. But Rick, you know, came to the ground with his jaw all bandaged and he said he had a broken jaw.
Funny
I never
that.
Saw any x-ray. But he pulled it off. But that was a great moment, walking out with Ian Davis in that second innings opening batting. And Dennis Lee had bowled them out. He took six wickets and they were bowled out for 95, chasing our 120.
Mm.
So we needed a solid opening partnership. And I opened with the Wizard. And I said, well, you know, who'll take strike? And he said, you.
First ball.
I'm not the night watchman. It was quarter to 12 in the day. But and then he kept knocking back singles to fine legs. And he said, Dennis Amos had a strong arm. But it was a terrific moment for me. In fact, it's just great to go to a test reunion because, you know, I don't seek out nude and up leg spinners. I just honed in on people of my ilk, like other great opening batsmen.
Oh, well, it was one of the great test matches, wasn't it? Kerry and Australia ended up winning by the same margin that they won the very first test 100 years earlier, 45 runs. It's uncanny. But that was also about the time when World Series cricket was starting to bubble along. Looking back on that era, that it was tumultuous, understandably, Kerry, but we had Greg Chappell on recently in the same segment, and he said that year of World Series cricket was probably the toughest cricket these ever played with. What are your memories of it, Kerry?
Oh, vague. Because I was on the country tour.
Yeah. Mm.
And it was tough, you know, playing on upcountry grounds against the West Indies pace juggernaut. And because they broke so many hands, they made me open again, you know. And they used to lock me in the Popemobile and drive me out to the centre. I was a little reluctant. But, mate, it was tough cricket. I mean, there were blokes batting for the World 11 coming in at 9 or 10 with about 20 first-class centuries.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was tough.
Did you get crowds, Kerry, in those country games?
And mate, we did. Mm. Because if the grounds weren't under the auspices of Cricket Australia, the council would give us the grounds. And, you know, we got some really good grounds, you know, around Country Victoria, Shepparton, Traralgon, the north coast of Queensland, Townsville, Mackay. You know, I played it everywhere.
Mm.
And I think they were interested because, and people come up to me now and say, you know, I was at Harrop Park, Mackay, when you were, and I met Lawrence Rowe, and when the West Indies came to town, that, you know, people of that era, baby boomers, often reflect on those the cricketers they met who'd come to their town back in late 70s, and of course now there's no upcountry visits by touring teams; they just play in the major cities.
Mm.
So that era is gone. But there's often reminiscing about how they met Viv Richards or they met Joel Garner in upcountry cricket matches. And it's terrific that, apart from the fact that coloured clothing and the marketing of the game and day-night cricket came in through the Packer revolution, cricket was taken to the bush, and that was a big plus.
Yeah. Well, if you went to Glen McGrath Oval yesterday or you went to Coogee Oval, you could have met Steve Smith or David Warner.
Good crowds there, too.
Thoughts on that, Kerry? What happened in the aftermath of that, the incident in South Africa, and what do you see for the cricket coming ahead? Because, of course, you're part of the new cricket channel for Fox Sports, which I think everyone's excited about.
Oh, yeah, as am I, Jimmy, yes. I mean, a new era of Australian cricket dawns. I think the players have been punished far greater than their crime, but that's just a personal view. They'll do it tough, but again, they're playing a level, as we saw yesterday, far better. That's, you know, far inferior to their ability. They'll dominate quad cricket. Warner with a century and Smith with 80-odd. But I'm very interested in where they go from here, because we've got a World Cup next year.
Yep.
And are they both locks for that? Yeah. In their best form, with a lot of first-class cricket behind them, obviously they are. But they are, you know, they can define whether we're a World Cup winning potential team or not, Steve Smith and Dave Warner. So
yeah.
I'm very interested in their headspace at the end of the ban and how they're viewed by Australian cricket.
Yeah. Yeah,
but mate, I'm looking forward to Fox Cricket. We've got two of the best female cricket broadcasters in the world in Melanie Jones and Ishigua.
Yes.
They are outstanding broadcasters. And we've got a lot of winners, you know, Shane Warne, Adam Gilchrist. We've got people that knew how to win test matches, are used to winning test matches. And there'll be a freshness to it. You know, Channel 9 served the game brilliantly for 40 years, but it was probably time for a different view. And, you know, female voices will be heard, and we'll have a lot of fun, which is crucial.
It'll be fantastic. This is what Master Monkey, one of our listeners, has sent in. Now, that's a comeback I'd love to see. Our talk topic today is comebacks. Kerry O'Keefe back on the radio, living legend who brightens up people's lives. Go Skull. So a sample of the feedback we've been getting, mate.
Well, thanks. It's funny, I retired from first-class cricket I was retired by the selectors in 1981, and I drifted for 20 years just doing things I was no good at. And I remember the penny dropped in 2001. My wife said to me, you know, you're best served by staying close to what moves you. And I thought, wow. Gambling and alcohol. But she meant cricket. And, you know, within a couple of months, having stayed loosely in touch with the game, ABC rang me, and my redemption started with ABC Test Grandstand Cricket. And I was 52 with not much, and 16 years later, I'm still involved. You know, I marvel
fantastic.
At it.
Yeah, we love it.
Much to the enjoyment of the listeners. Yeah. Kerry, great to have you on the program, mate. As always, we could go forever with our legend of the game. No different with you. And thanks for your time, and enjoy the summer coming up with Fox.
Thanks, Jimmy. All the best to you too.
Thanks, Kerry.